In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void. And darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light. And there was light.
So we looked at the first verse the last 2 weeks. We're going to look at the second through the fifth verses this week if we get to them all. And the second verse says, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. So world, that's the earth. Okay, we looked at earth as the concept of matter. And then there's the earth as we live on. And I think the first verse, looking at the word earth as the concept of matter, was created. Matter had to be created sometime, and it was created then. But what we do know about the earth that we live on now, it was without form, and it was void. So what does that concept mean, was void and without form? The idea of without form and void comes from the word form comes from the word toho, T-O-H-O. And it implies emptiness. It implies an empty space. It implies nothing. It implies confusion. The earth was not a spherical mass that we have today. It was empty space. It was nothing. It was without form. There was no form of the earth yet when the second book of Genesis, or the second verse in Genesis, was written. And it was empty. Empty means void. There was nothing there. It was emptiness. And so that's what the world was in the second verse. It was without form and it was empty. And darkness was on the face of the deep. Now, I've always looked at the word deep as the concept of the deep. We think of the deep as what? The waters. But there was no oceans yet. So I don't think that's what this means. Darkness simply means there wasn't any light yet. Light hadn't been created yet. We're going to find that in the next verse, aren't we? But at this point in time, there was no light. So there wasn't any light. Light had not been created. Some say that's energy. Maybe so. But the basic, according to Henry Morris and his book on the book of Genesis, and this seems to make a lot of sense to me, the deep implies the basic elements were sustained in some sort of watery matrix, okay? And why does he say that? He looks at 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 5, and Peter says, and the earth was standing out of the water and in the water. That's kind of a hard concept to kind of understand, but the way Dr. Morris puts it is, it was in a watery matrix. The basic elements of the earth were in a watery matrix. And during this time too, we know from Proverbs, verse 8, 24 and 27, there were no depths, so think out of the deep of the water. There weren't those yet. When he prepared the heavens, and I was there when he set a compass upon the face of the deep. And the idea of compass now may imply that some polarity is beginning to form in the earth. There may be coming now a north, a south, a magnetic field, if you will, but there's some polarity occurring at this point in time, at least beginning to occur. And when it talks about the face of the earth, that the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, the idea of face there is the presence of this watery matrix, this formless earth. Kind of the same idea if we would use the word face in other ways. So it's in the presence. And the Spirit of God moved. I believe that probably implies the Holy Spirit. We know that God is the triad of Jesus and God and the Holy Spirit. And during this time, the Holy Spirit was moving. The Spirit of God moved upon the earth. And the idea of moving implies the idea of fluttering. That's what that word actually means in Genesis. It's fluttering, like a butterfly, or shaking. Or we might even use the translation today, the modern translation would be vibrating. So according to Dr. Morris, and this, again, this is his point of view, and it seems to make some sense in view of what we know about the universe and the world today, the universe was becoming energized by the Spirit of God in the form of movement or sound waves. And all energy, by the way, comes in waves. It either comes in light, sound, or heat. But for whatever reason, the Holy Spirit was moving on the face of the earth. And he says probably at this time, we know, we talked last week about all the forces of the universe, and we really only know three forces, gravitation, electromagnetism, and the nuclear forces, of which there's two. There's a strong and weak forces. Those forces had to be made sometime. And again, we're still in the first day. This is, the first day has not been completed. So at this point, probably gravitational force began. And how long did this take during that first day? I don't know. Could God have spoken it in the first second? Well, he could have. He could have spoke the whole universe within 6 days, and he could have done it in 1 second. But he divided it up into 6 days. Seventh day rested. But gravitational force could have very well been started at that point in time. Now we're getting into the third and fourth verses. And God said, let there be light, and there was light. And God saw the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. This third verse is actually the first time in the book of Genesis. Of course, we've only gone three verses where God is actually speaking. This is the first reference of God speaking. Now, speaking, what does that mean? Who was he talking to, and you know, what language was he using? This is a metaphor, okay? This is God doing something when it says God speaking. And that's how we can best understand it. It's hard to understand it any other way. The question, though, is, it's the first record of God speaking, but the question is, what was the source of the light? Jerry asked this question in his class when we first began to study the book of Genesis. The light was created. What was the source? Where was the source? Any ideas? We know it wasn't the sun. Wasn't created yet. It wasn't the stars. What day were they created? Day four. Get that in about verse 14. So that's a question. Now, I'm going to give you what some say is the source. And I'm going to tell you right now, I cannot say for sure. God was the source. He created it. So we want to use it from that point of view. God was the source of the light. But some have said God was the light. And to me, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense, but I've heard that before. Some have said God was the light. But if God was the light, why did he say that he formed the light? Wouldn't had to have formed the light. And God said, let there be light. That implies there was darkness before. In fact, the verse before that said, darkness was on the face of the earth. So I can't buy that, but I'll give you the reasoning, I think the reasoning on why some people might say that. And they go to these verses. Some say God was the light. God is the light. And it says, 1 John 1:5 says, God is light, and in him is no darkness. That's what that verse says. And we go to Revelation, we go to the book of Revelation, and the city has no need of the sun or the moon to shine upon it, for the glory of God has illumined it, talking about the spiritual city of Jerusalem that we're going to hope to attain to, heaven. And its lamp is the Lamb. Who's that? Jesus Christ, of course. And you look at the book of the Revelation. So we got two verses there that imply that God is light, and in him is no darkness. But we had darkness on the face of the earth. Some even referenced God speaking to Moses in the burning bush, saying, well, there he is. He's got light. And how bright that light was. Of course, we know that in the burning bush, Exodus 3:2 said it was actually an angel in the Lord that was in the midst of that bush. Furthermore, Jesus is referred to as light. Jesus himself says in John 1:9, he was the light of the world. I'm not being facetious here. These verses are used, okay? But I'm just trying to point out what I believe to be the case. But guess what? We're light. Christians are referred to as light by Jesus and Paul. Christ was referred to us as lights of the world. You are the light of the world. You know, that story about hiding the light under the bush and under the basket. And then Paul says that we were lights. We are lights of the world in Ephesians 5:8. Furthermore, 1 Timothy 6:16 said God dwells in unapproachable light. So if God is light, he's dwelling in light. I guess that would have him dwelling in himself. And it says that God is the Father of lights in James 1:17. But we know God formed both the darkness and the light in Isaiah 45:7. What's the common problem with using these verses to trying to show that God is literally light. So we go back to Genesis 1. God said, let there be light. He's talking, I believe, at that point of a physical light. Physical light, not spiritual light. The problem is a failure to understand the way word light is used. The word light is used as physical light, which I think is what Genesis chapter 1, verse 3 is talking about. And I believe God created it. He wasn't the light. He may have, you could say, well, he was the source of the light. Yes, he was the source in the fact that he created it. To equate God with physical light either shows ignorance of what light is, physical light, or the way light is used figuratively in various ways in the Bible. There's all kinds of different ways that the word light is used. If you go to your concordance, if you have one of those, you'll look how the word light is used. And it's not always used as physical light. But whatever was being created there in that verse separated darkness. So he's not talking about spiritual light there. And I think he's talking about something that God created. He didn't mention it before. Also the word and. I'm going to go back. I might not be able to find that real quick, but we'll see the word and in verse 3. And implies that these are going in some sort of sequential order. And you'll see that throughout the book of Genesis. And so that implies, once again, that there was no light at this point in time. There was no physical light at this point in time. So I believe that we don't... So what was the source? I don't know what we could say the source was. Did it absolutely need a source? I don't think it absolutely... God said he created it, and he created it. So whether there was a sun or whether there were stars to do it, we know there was light. That's all we really need to know, and that's the only thing we can be dogmatic about, is that light was created. And I believe God was the source of that light, but he wasn't the light himself. This was physical light that was created. So what is light? Henry Moore says light that was created here, quote unquote, energized the universe. Now, he also says that the Holy Spirit energized the universe in the form of sound. That may or may not be true, but certainly light seems to have energized the universe. Light is energy. So let's look at light. Visible light is implied in this verse because it separates the light from the darkness. But we're going to look at some qualities of light here, and we're going to show that light is a lot more than just visible light. It's energy in different forms. So what is light? Basically, what physicists have determined is that light is electromagnetic waves. That's what light is. And we only see a very small portion of that. The portion that humankind, our eyes were designed by God to see, is a very narrow spectrum of what light is. You have ultraviolet light, you have short waves, you have long waves, infrared light and other long waves, all sorts of characteristics. And that's not the difference in the speeds. The speeds of light are the same. Electromagnetic waves move at the same speed. But it has to do with the amplitude of those speeds and the short waves and the long waves. Not that speed, but of those waves. So what are characteristics of light? Again, different waves. Long waves are radio waves. Radio waves are light. Never thought of that before, but that's what they are. They are long electromagnetic waves. They are a form of light. And then you have gamma rays. And you don't want to be around a lot of gamma rays. Because gamma rays, that's radiation. Yeah, you're being, you know, if you're exposed to a lot of gamma rays. But it's a form of light. It's the spectrum of where light is. So you can see when God created light, I think it had to include not only the visible form of light that we can use to see with, but in the other forms of light that we have, or the other characteristics of light, both in the long waves and the short waves. And that gives you kind of an idea of the difference between the long waves and the short waves. The very short waves are on my left-hand side, okay? That includes ultraviolet light. It includes the cosmic rays, the gamma rays. And we're going to look at the cosmic background radiation later on in this class, because some have used that to show that the universe is billions of years old. And we'll look at that. But those can be measured, and those are found bombarding our Earth every day. Then you have X-rays, which we use in the medical field a lot. Then you have the ultraviolet rays. Then you have the visible light waves that we see there. And they start with the purple and go to the red. And in the very long waves, then that's where we get into radio waves and the broadcast band waves and so forth. That's what light is. It's waves of energy. And as we talked about, I think last class, that it has mass, but it also has wave-like activity. So it has particles. That's what we refer to as photons. That's not something just strictly from Star Trek. There are we use the concept of photons, and there's mass, and that's been proven experimentally. We talked about that last week. That kind of gives you the idea how light has both a wave characteristic to it and a particle characteristic to it, just like in electricity. If you measure electricity, you can find that it has wave and particle activity. I know that's a little bit deep, but that's just the way light is. It has a certain speed, and that speed was set when it was created, and it hasn't changed. We've never seen any change in the speed of light, and I assume it's never been different. And that's a very, very fast speed. Used to be a joke by some baseball player how fast he was. I forget who that was, Satchel Paige or someone. I think it was Satchel Paige. He could turn out the light and be in bed before it got dark. Oh, he couldn't do that, but that would be pretty fast, okay, because it's an extremely fast, fast speed. It moves at a certain speed, and that speed can be measured, and it has been measured very accurately, as you can see here. And we know, for example, we talked about this last week too, how fast is sunlight? Well, it does take about 8 minutes and 17 seconds. I think I said 8 seconds last week, but that's not true. Sunlight takes about 8 minutes and 17 seconds to travel an average distance from the surface of the sun to the earth. So when something happens on the sun, we're seeing it 8 minutes later. Okay, when you see solar storms on the sun, we're actually seeing that about 8 minutes later because it takes that long for light to get to us. So obviously the sun is not a light year away. It doesn't take a year to get to us, but it takes about 8 minutes. Again, I think I misspoke last week. So light reflected off the moon only takes about 1.3 seconds to get here. The moon does not produce its own light. You understand that. We will talk about the moon. The Bible will talk about the moon as being a source of light, and it is only because it reflects light from the sun. If you saw the earth from outer space, we'd have light. We're reflecting light from the sun, though. The earth doesn't produce light. So it travels in discrete quanta, kind of the quantum theory. That's where quantum theory got its start, was how fast light travels and how it travels in these photons. And the concept of quantum theory has this idea that light travels in these bursts of photons, and quanta is what it's called. And that's the theory, that's the formula. We're not going to look at that, but you can look at that if you want to in detail later when I get these printed out. So the other characteristic of light, it is a source of energy. We know that. It's a major source of energy. We wouldn't be alive if we didn't have light. We need that energy. It's a requirement. Requirement for plants. Very few plants can grow in the dark. They need light to grow and develop chlorophyll and so forth. And this is interesting, and we'll see this when we come up in our next section. It's important that we have visible light in order to see, because what does it do? In addition to allowing us to live, it allows us to discover things about the universe. And I think that's the reason, that's again one of the reasons we were given visible light. And here's another thing. As far as we know, contrary to what a lot of quasi-scientists out there may say, nothing travels faster than the speed of light. That was one of the bedrocks of Einstein's theory of relativity. Nothing can travel faster than the speed of light, and we have yet to discover any. How would you discover something that traveled faster than the speed of light? It'd be hard to do, hard to come up with an experiment where you could even do that. If you think about it for a minute, you'll see what I'm saying. Now, this is really interesting, and it's also a bedrock of relativity. And that is, the speed of light is always measured the same, no matter what the frame of reference is. And this is a very peculiar concept of light, and it was a part of light that God created in this verse. So let's go back to our relativity theory before. If I'm sitting on Earth, and I'm watching a train that has a big window in it, if you will, and you can use any experiment you want to use, and someone is throwing a ball to another person in that train, and I'm going to measure the speed of the ball. The train's going 100 miles an hour. The ball's being thrown, let's say, at 40 miles an hour. I guess maybe it's Nolan Ryan. He's throwing a ball at 100 miles an hour. That's irrelevant. But if I'm on the train and I'm measuring the speed of the ball, well, let's just make it 100 miles an hour to make the numbers easy. How fast is that ball moving for the person measuring it on the train? 100 miles an hour. But if I'm on the ground and I'm measuring the speed of the ball and it's being thrown at 100 miles an hour, but the train is going 100 miles an hour, how fast is that ball traveling now? Yeah, it's a lot faster. That's one part of relativity. Light violates that. It violates that. If you measure the speed of light in the train, you will get whatever that number was we just saw, 299 million meters per second plus. Guess what? If you measure the speed of the light, if you're outside that train, what do you get? You get the same number. And a lot of the concepts that we talked about even last week on relativity, and we talked about time dilation, it has to do with this very concept of light. And it's true. I don't know why, but it's true of our physical universe. So I just thought it was interesting. We say God created light, to look at these characteristics of light in this first verse so that we get an idea. What was its source? Once again, God was the source. He was not the light. But where was that exact source? Don't know. Don't guess it's that important for us to know. Maybe someday we'll figure that out. So at this point in time, we're ending up getting close to the end of the first day. All the forces of the universe, I believe, were now activated. And again, those are the three forces. Four, if you consider the nuclear force, strong and weak. And you know what I mean by nuclear force? Nuclear force is what binds atoms together. Okay, the particles of the universe together. They are the strongest forces that we have. That's what the nuclear bomb is all about. Is looking at that, and that was all predicated on relativity theory. All right, let's go to verse 4. And this is another reason I say God was not the light. God saw the light, and he saw that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and the evening and the morning were the first day. So at the very end of this first day, the earth would seem to be at this point to be having some sort of, be forming some sort of sphere. Because you're having a dividing of the light and the darkness at this point in time. At least it would seem to me. And Dr. Morris says this too. And so that division where the light was shining on would be day, and where the light was not shining on this sphere would be darkness. And God called that light day, and he called the darkness night. And this is for our understanding. I don't think he literally said, this is light, this is day. You understand that, but this is how it's divided. So this cyclical light-day arrangement then implies the earth was now rotating on some sort of axis. Now, Genesis doesn't tell us this, and here we go with what the word day actually means, because a lot of time is spent on what the word day actually means. The word day generally implies a daytime and a night, and for us, that is a 24-hour period. So one more time, completed in the first day then. I'm going to summarize this. Completed on the first day, we have time, we have space, we have matter, we have gravitational force, and we have the nuclear forces that were made, and we have the electromagnetic force. Before I get to that, the other thing that I want to look to, go to Proverbs chapter 8, verse 24. Because this deals with the creation in the beginning as well, but from, you know, talks about it in Proverbs chapter 8, verse 24. Well, let's go to verse 22. The Lord possessed me at the beginning of his way, before his works of old. From everlasting I was established, from the beginning, from the earliest times of the earth. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no springs abounding in the water. Okay, he's talking about this idea of space and depths not being the literal water. And before the mountains were settled and before the hills were brought forth, when I was not yet made. Then let's skip on down to verse 28. When he made firm the skies and when the springs of the deep became fixed, And when he set for the sea its boundary, and also the idea of setting his compass on the earth. So I believe at this point in time, then you have the beginning of this, the earth becoming spherical, beginning its rotation, and we have the separation of night and day. But there was probably one, and this is Dr. Morrison, and he says this is his idea, and again, not being dogmatic about this, but there's probably or possibly something else that was formed in the very first day. And he says that it was angels. So when did angels begin? Genesis doesn't tell us. Not that I know of. Have you thought of that? Were angels always around? No. They were created beings. And so he would put angels in this first day. Guess it doesn't matter that much, but he says that angels were probably created at this point. And he goes to go. Look at Job chapter 38. In verses 4 through 7 of Job chapter 38. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me, if you have any understanding. This is the Lord talking to Job. Okay? Who set its measurements, since you know? Or who stretched out the line on it? And on what were the bases sunk? And who laid the cornerstone? When the morning stars sang, and all the sons of God shouted for joy. Now, the sons of God here, who were they? Well, there was somebody there shouting, and they were talking about the foundation of the earth. I think it's angels. Anybody have any other ideas on that? It would seem to be created beings. What was the purpose of the angels? Look at Hebrews chapter 1. And it says, are they not all ministering spirits sent out to render service for the sake of those who will inherit salvation? Angels' purpose is to minister. That's what their purpose was. And then turn to Psalms 104, beginning in verses 2 and 3. Covering thyself with light as with a cloak, stretching out heaven like a tent curtain, he lays the beams of his upper chambers in the waters. He makes the clouds his chariot. He walks upon the wings of the wind. He makes the winds his messengers, flaming fire his messengers. He established the earth upon its foundation so that it will not totter forever and ever. And so verse 4, he makes the words his messengers. Okay, some of you, the winds his messengers. Again, the concept of maybe angels in that verse. Angels were created beings. And I don't believe they existed, you know, this idea that angels were around since the beginning of time or since before the beginning of time, it doesn't seem to be the concept. Angels were created beings and they had a specific specific job.